Cricket on the Brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just remember the car ride home with my dad. I was crying. And, you know, he just says, don't worry, we'll go to Italy now and we'll try it. And you know, my mum, she sold a shop. We leased our house. We left everything just to go for a trial.
Christian Volpato. Imagine being rejected at the club level in Australia. Your parents selling their business so you could chase your dream on the other side of the world. Well, the family teamwork made his dream work. And there was a time when the 22-year-old wanted to represent Italy, not the Socceroos. At this World Cup, he's provided a green and gold spark and will likely be a pivotal part of the clash with Mo Salah's Egypt. Isn't that a wild sequence of events? Truth really is stranger than fiction. Today we're talking Volpato, the Socceroos, Egypt, and some insane storylines from Brazil, Japan, Germany, Paraguay, and the Netherlands, Morocco. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Tom Wilder is covering the World Cup for ABC Sport. Tom, welcome. We've heard dribs and drabs from Christian Volpato over the weeks, months, and years. Today was a rare all-in press conference, and you can kind of understand the press pack trying to drive into his decision to play for Australia because we kind of hadn't had a consensus view put to him. What did we learn from the Australian?
All we've heard from Christian Volpato has been in the mix zone after the games, which have been very much focused on just his performance and the performance of the Socceroos, and a video put out by Football Australia due to the intense interest in his decision. But like you said, today he actually had to face the media pack in Oakland. Really what it was about was trying to understand when he made the decision, what drove the decision, and how he had responded or felt about some of the reaction to his decision. So they revealed today that he basically didn't make the decision final until very late May after a game against Parma in which Alessandro Ciccati played, the Australian central defender, played in that game.
To be quite fair, it was actually after the game against Parma. When we played against Ciccati, and you know, I was just something clicked, and my heart said, you know, just go. I think you belong there.
But it was a culmination of 4.5 years of consideration. So, if you may remember, he turned down a Graham Arnold approach to play in Qatar for Australia in 2022, even as recently as I think it was March, basically after a Sassuolo game, his club game, said, you know, he's waiting for Italy to call him up, and there was some speculation around, you know, whether or not he would be called up. Fabio Grosso, his former coach at Sassuolo, said that he should be called up for Italy and that he could reach the very highest levels. Ultimately, after Italy didn't make the World Cup, he was overlooked for the latest Italian squad. They picked a very young team. He wasn't in it. And a lot of people speculated that that was part of his decision to switch allegiances to Australia, the opportunity to go to a World Cup, and the fact that perhaps he didn't see himself in the Italian setup going forward.
For me, it was just like, I want to play for Australia because Italy could have called me to the World Cup and I could have been like, but I just chose, like, I wanted to play for Australia. I felt like it was right. I felt like I can be myself and I can show myself here.
He left it very late. He didn't arrive to the squad until just days before Tony Popovich named his final 26. And there was a bit of a rush. He had to come home, get a new passport because his Australian passport had expired. There would have been some paperwork that FIFA required from him. So it happened very last minute. And it was literally a last second decision from him.
What I also found really interesting was the earlier story of rejection from the Western Sydney Wanderers and Sydney FC and what it meant for his journey. It was quite emotive stuff. Like, this is a guy who speaks in a sort of monotone, I guess, cadence, but also seems to speak rather deeply. Do you think that emotive story also kind of goes some way to explaining an earlier desire or interest to play for Italy?
I think it does. You're dead right. He speaks, if you just listen to the tone of how he speaks, you probably wouldn't take in all of the words he says, but when you break down what he actually says, he does speak quite deeply, very much from an emotional point of view. You're right, he was rejected from the Sydney FC Academy and the Western Sydney Wanderers Academy when he was 12. He talked today about crying on the way home and his dad saying, you know, that's it, we're going to go to Italy, have a crack there. He had some contacts at AS Roma, the Serie A club. His mum sold their cafe. They leased out their house. They flew to Italy, and he was lucky enough that he performed in a trial. I think he scored a hat trick coming off the bench and was taken into the Roma Academy.
Thank God I made the trial, and my life changed from there. So I feel like I have to give a lot as well to Italy, because you know that they gave me a second opportunity.
It was put to him that perhaps the way he felt he had been treated at a young age by some of the academies had led to some animosity towards the Australian football setup. I'm not sure that it was like a fair assertion to put to him. He was only 12 when those rejections took place. But he also said that really it had nothing to do with it.
Growing up in Australia and playing for like the two best academies in Sydney, I got told from both of them that, you know, I'm not good enough to play. And, you know, I just felt like it was my time to just, I don't know. I've always wanted to go to Italy as a kid. So I think it came out perfectly.
But the approach from Tony Popovic and Paul O'Connor in March, then the subsequent conversations with Alessandro Ciccati and playing against him in Parma, that changed his mind. So it is a really interesting story. And, you know, of all the players who have gone through academies and failed at the first hurdle, his is really a story of resilience and taking an opportunity and creating an opportunity. He was lucky that his parents were able to help him on that journey. And Australia is the beneficiary of them taking him to Italy.
It's crazy to think that for a guy who just earned his first start for Australia, who's played twice for the Socceroos, he all of a sudden feels like part of the furniture, like this intrinsic, important, foundational piece of the Socceroos' attacking spark. How significant is he for this clash with Egypt, and are we expecting him to start?
I would expect him to start. He has shown in the glimpses that we've seen of him that he has an enormous technical ability. Something that the Socceroos definitely lack is someone really confident on the ball, demands possession. The amount of times against Paraguay, the Socceroos went down the right-hand side where he was linking up with Jordi Bosz and looked for him as their main connector from defence through to attack. His link-up play with Nestori Iringa-Kunda against the United States was brilliant. I don't know what the right mix is for the Australians in terms of playing Iringa-Kunda, Volpato, Connor Metcalf and Moturé in attack. Four doesn't go into three, and it's unlikely that Popovic is going to change his formation, especially, you know, this is the way he's drilled his team. But I would be very surprised if Volpato isn't in the starting 11. It's just how he finds the best way of getting Volpato and Iringa-Kunda and Metcalf or Touré to work together, because it feels like Iringa-Kunda isn't quite good enough or big enough to play as a nine, as an out-and-out striker, but he offers so much X factor that you want to see him on the park. Volpato demonstrated his technical ability. How Popovic blends those players together is going to be really interesting.
So that's the selection picture from an Australian point of view. As we edge closer to the clash with Egypt, all eyes from an African standpoint are on Mo Salah. Is he expected to be fit for Egypt?
I doubt he'll play. So he has a hamstring injury. He requested to be subbed off in their 1-1 draw with Iran.
This is the end of the evening for Mo Salah. Egypt's superstar departs early in the second half.
A game that if they had lost, they wouldn't be playing against Australia. He's a massive blow. He's just left Liverpool. So from a professional standpoint for Mo Salah, this tournament is about also him finding a new club to continue his career and also continuing what has been a very impressive tournament for African nations. They have overperformed to make it through the amount of teams that have made it through to the knockout stages. Egypt is probably a team that, without Mo Salah, is definitely substantially weaker. He's the most recognisable player in that country. He's the captain and he's their most attacking weapon. So if he doesn't play, Australia will feel very confident in getting a result. The risk for Egypt is, do they play him and he makes the injury worse and is therefore out for the rest of the tournament, or they don't play him and they're eliminated and then he doesn't play anyway for the rest of the tournament. So those are the considerations within the Egyptian camp. They've obviously got Marmoush, the Manchester City player, who plays at the very highest level, but a lot of the Egyptian players play in Egypt in the domestic league. So it's quite hard to get a read on what they're like. Aidan Fox earlier this week described them as a fearless team, a team that is entirely confident in their ability and won't take a backward step. So what Australia really needs to do is play the way they played against Paraguay, take the game to the Egyptians and not let themselves get pinned back in defence, because we saw that against the USA and it didn't work well. So hopefully they've learned from that and they really try to control the game from the outset.
We're at the stage of the tournament where penalties come into the equation, and we saw Paraguay, Australia's most recent opponents, eliminate the might of Germany, a four-time winner, in penalties, in wild scenes. How is the Socceroos thinking about that? How are they preparing for that, aside from just taking a bunch of penalties at training? Like, what does that look like as they try to hone that skill for the knockout stage?
Publicly, they're really not talking about penalties. They've been asked several occasions about, you know, are they doing preparations for it? But they really seem to be focused on not letting the game go to penalties. Even the most composed and experienced player can crumble under pressure. I would be really interested to know if Tony Popovich is considering a sort of Andrew Redmayne scenario, the grey wiggle, a penalty specialist in bringing maybe Paul Izzo in on if it looks like it's going to penalties. It's really hard to know who would even take the penalties for Australia, because we haven't seen them have a lot of penalties in recent games. It's like in competitive games, friendlies don't have penalties, the group stage doesn't have penalties. So I don't know who their preferred penalty takers would be, but it must be a consideration, because the game could well come down to 120 minutes plus penalties, and you would not want to go out by being underprepared. But honestly, Pat, they really haven't spoken about them. They haven't made a big deal of them. They haven't made a big deal of the fact they haven't been scoring goals in open play. They've seen, as has been the Socceroos' way this tournament, very much sticking to the party line of backing themselves to win the game in regular time. And not really focusing on what they're lacking, but more focusing on what they've been good at, which has been defence as a whole.
You can read Tom Wilde's coverage and analysis on the ABC Sport website. Tom, thanks for speaking to us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Pat.
Headlines. Where to start? I guess we'll go sequentially. The Brazil-Japan game was an absolute corker. The vibes, the aura, the names of Brazil against the technical excellence and the systemic perfection of Japan. Brazil trailed 1-0, leveled through Casemiro. Vinicius Jr. hit the post in a dynamic run in the 57th minute. Just when extra time looked inevitable, Gabriel Martinelli scores in the 96th minute.
Guimarães. Pass through. What a ball, Martinelli! Brazil are heading through to the round of 16.
Brazil's Italian manager, Carlo Ancelotti, breathing a sigh of relief. They'll next play either Cote d'Ivoire or Norway. Australia's most recent opponent, Paraguay, and Germany, they did need extra time after being locked at 1-1. The Germans looked to have won it when a headed goal was ruled out because the Paraguayan keeper was adjudged to have been fouled by VAR. It looked soft to us. We ended up in penalties, and Paraguay did what no one else has ever done before at a World Cup. They beat the Germans on penalties.
Surely this time for Paraguay. He does score! Paraguay's most powerful World Cup result in their history.
7 million Paraguayans going wild. France or Sweden will be next for them. Finally, Morocco and the Netherlands went head-to-head in Monterrey. The Africans had the best of the first half before a defensive error gave Cody Gakpo the chance to put the Dutch ahead.
Hit on by Valverkhorst into the path of Somerville, who goes down. And it's left, and it's into the back of the net! And some things are just bigger than football. Some things, some goals, just mean more.
Commentators referring to Gakpo's announcement that he and his wife had lost their unborn son during the tournament. It was emotional scenes as the player was mobbed by his teammates. But the game was not over. Morocco equalised late. It went to penalties where both teams missed multiple attempts. Soufiane Rahimi's penalty appeared to have been saved but slipped away from underneath the Dutch keeper, and his trailing foot kicked it back into his own net. This had everything. Ultimately, it was the Africans progressing for a round of 16 clash with Canada. What a day at this tournament. Two European heavyweights knocked out. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup special produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to SBS for the extra audio used in this episode.